Welcome back to My Seminary Life. I'm your host, Brandon Knight. This is our series, Celebrate March, where in each episode, I am talking about somebody who was born in the month of March, who has made an impact on faith, religion, pop culture, in some cases, all of the above. This is a special double celebration episode, though, because this is the 150th episode of the show. Unless I go back and renumber things, then it's actually like 172, but I'm not Marvel. It's episode 150. We're going to stick with that. And for this special double celebration episode, we are here to celebrate the birth of the man who, when he does a push-up, he does not push himself up, but rather pushes the world down. Chuck Norris. And to talk about Chuck Norris here today, I've brought back from Happy Day Ministries, Joe Day. Joe, welcome back to the show.
Thanks for having me back. And, you know, a happy birthday anniversary celebration to MSL.
Well, thank you. It's an exciting time. Sometimes I'm very surprised that I managed to get 3 years into this. And 150 plus bonus episodes. So, yeah, thank you. Appreciate that. 3 years in podcasting is actually like longevity now. So
it really is. It really is. It's like 10 years doing any other activity.
It's like Buddy Walk is on like 4 or 5 now, correct?
5. Yeah.
5 years? That's awesome. That's very exciting. So as I said, we're here today to celebrate the birth of Carlos Ray Norris, or as he is more well known, Chuck Norris. Joe, pop quiz, how old is Chuck Norris?
I mean, the real question is does Chuck Norris even age at this point? Or
fair question. You seen him lately? His beard's still pretty good.
Yeah, it is. His beard game is still on point. I'm going to go with 63.
Ooh. So Chuck Norris was born on March 10th, 1940. So he will be turning 84 years old. So you were very generous to our good friend, Mr. Chuck. He looks 20 years younger. Don't know what he's doing other than that workout machine he used to promote. It takes 20 years off, I guess.
Yeah, right. They just need to put him in front of it now at this point. That's the best marketing that they could have.
Oh, absolutely. What is that thing called? Total Gym?
The Total Gym, yeah.
Yeah, I think that's what it was. I should have looked that up ahead of time. Total Gym. So for those of you who have been living under the rather large rock, Chuck Norris, here's a career overview for everybody. After his military service, went into the karate tournament scene, which I always find very ironic because apparently you don't have to train in karate to be in the karate tournament scene, because he has black belts in Brazilian jiu-jitsu, judo, and most importantly, tongsudo, which has often been called Korean karate, but doesn't train in traditional karate styles. On the karate tournament scene, he made quite the impact and also came across the late, great Joe Louis in a lot of the tournament finals. Transitioned into film in the 70s and rose to popularity in the 80s. Another one of these OMAC, one-man Army Corps kind of characters like Stallone, Schwarzenegger, Bruce Willis. But unique to him, more martial art focused than the other guys, and did a lot of independent films, a lot of films with United Artists and other indie films, while all the rest of those guys were doing like major motion pictures. In the 90s, he transitioned to the small screen, playing the lead character in the much beloved Walker, Texas Ranger, retired from acting in the right around the 2000s, although he's continued to make sporadic commercial and film cameos, one of my favorites being his role in The Expendables 2. That was perfect casting for him. They just wrote that entirely around him. And as Joe and I mentioned here today, is still timeless. And because of his on-screen persona, he has built this, what has come to be known as Chuck Norris facts, these statements that are supposed to be true about Chuck Norris, but truly can only be true of a demigod, so that's what we're considering him, apparently. Joe, when you look over the broad view of Chuck Norris's career, what are some things that stand out to you?
So I think it kind of goes off of one of the things that you had said, that in a world where so many of these action heroes are trying to create the next blockbuster, create the next big film and all of that, he was fine with playing something that was more of a character in a movie that was a little more artisan than some of the others. I mean, it's still, don't get me wrong, you still look at most of his filmography, it is still 80s and 90s action schlock in all of its wonderful glory. But he it feels like his movies more often than not were more apt to tell a story than maybe some of his contemporaries were.
I like that. Yeah, I think you're right. A lot of his story, or a lot of his films, especially I think like some of the earlier ones, like Good Guys Wear Black immediately comes to mind. Mm-hmm. That's an indie film. That movie is an indie film. Chuck's acting, it's never been one of his strong suits. Honestly, none of these guys' acting has ever been really one of their strong suits, other than maybe Stallone. I think Stallone's acting has gotten better over the years. Old Man Stallone is a very good actor, I think. But I would agree, you know, in an era where the overly muscular 80s action star was like the big deal thing in the box office, Chuck was a little bit more, I mean, he was always in shape, but he seemed to be happy doing the films that he was doing that were more B, but were still very good stories. I think for me, when I look at the career of Chuck Norris, I also just see longevity. You know, his like tournament scene stuff that starts all the way back in like the 60s and the 70s into the 70s and getting into acting in the 70s and still kind of showing up here and there all the way into like the 2010s. Like, that's a long time being on people's screens, and that says something, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, especially when you go from world to world to world. Like, he was never so proud to have to stay in like film, or like he was fine with doing what he did and then transitioning into TV in a way that like always staying busy meant that he didn't have as much of an ego.
That's a good way to put it, because there are, you know, you look at a lot of his contemporaries, like transitioning into television, that was never really like a consideration for them for a very long time. Like, Stallone has just now, I think it's on Paramount Plus, which is still a streaming show, has started doing television. Bruce Willis did come from television, so him withstanding. Right. Or like Schwarzenegger, after all these years, did like the Celebrity Apprentice for a little bit. Like, for some of these guys, like moving into television is like a step down, whereas Chuck seemed to be fine with that transition to a small screen role. And Walker, Texas Ranger was on for a very long time. It was a very popular show.
Yeah, it was right up there with shows like Baywatch and stuff like that, where there were shows that, you know, yes, we can look through the lens of history and not everything about the 90s and all of its shows and all that kind of stuff ages all that great, but at the time in the era, these shows were a big deal. They were pop culture touchstones for a lot of folks, and Walker, Texas Ranger was right up there.
We're going to talk more about that, because I think there's an interesting dichotomy that comes out when you retrospectively look back at the 90s. But before we get there, let's talk about a few other things first. Joe and I, listeners, Joe and I share a number of similar hobbies and interests. It's not like we were often paired up together for a certain other geek podcast that you can listen to here on the Anazao Ministries Podcast Network. Shout out to our old home, Systematic Geekology. But one of those common interests and hobbies is the martial arts. Joe spent some time in the cage. I'm teaching martial arts now, something I never actually considered was something that would happen in my life, and I'm happy for it. What role or what influence, is, if any, did Chuck Norris play for you in your training as a martial artist?
So one of the things that was really heavily instilled in me, I didn't always listen to it, but it was instilled in me to approach martial arts in a very particular way with a very particular mindset. And it wasn't for the sake of getting into a fight or anything like that. It was more for the self aspect of martial arts. Now, mind you, with the years that I spent training and the years that I spent in the cage and all of that, that wasn't always how it all played out. But for me, I was always drawn to a handful of influences for people from different disciplines that were all fighters. Guys like Muhammad Ali, guys like Bruce Lee, and guys like Chuck Norris, who had a solid philosophy in attachment to the kind of stuff that they were doing and the fact that they were doing action shows and all of that kind of stuff.
Okay. Yeah, for me, looking back, similarly, I had those guys. Everybody's got those guys that they look up to and try to emulate a little bit. I remember, particularly in high school, you know, Bruce Lee was a big influence for me. I was doing a lot of the running backwards that he does, like during his sparring. Now that I'm a little bit heavier, if I did it, I probably would look like Shane McMahon during in a match. Another one, this shows you when I was very heavily training in martial arts. I was trying to do the spinning back fist like John Jones. That was a thing for me there for a while. But when I was actively training, particularly in a dojo, Chuck Norris was never really like a direct influence for me. I watched his movies and I enjoyed his work, but I think a lot of his stuff for me was like, okay, yeah, but I'm not going to do a jump sidekick through a windshield to hit a guy through the other side. Super cool looking in a movie. Yeah. Never going to happen. Now as an adult, though, I look at guys like Chuck Norris, like Bill Superfoot Wallace, Ken Shamrock, I would put in that category as well, of like, yeah, they shouldn't be taking any fights anytime soon, but in some ways they still got it. It's kind of like, to use other sports analogies, Michael Jordan shouldn't be playing a pickup game against the NBA All-Stars anytime soon. But if you just put him on the line, he's going to be making baskets still, yeah. You know? Similarly, with some of these older guys who are still around, Gene LaBelle, back when he was still alive, was another big influence for me, of just like, keep going. You know, if these guys in their apparently 60s, 70s, and 80s can still get out there, still work out, still hit the heavy bag, shouldn't be taking fights, but can still do that stuff, that's encouragement to me as I enter the ripe old age of 30 to continue to work out, continue to look for new opportunities to push myself in the martial arts, or even with this new job that I have. It's a lot of, like, along with martial arts, like gymnastics and parkour. And I don't think you're supposed to start your gymnastics career at this age, but it's this seeing these older guys like still out there, still training, encourages me to keep going.
Yeah. it's martial arts is a weird thing because in some ways, you know, it's said that it's a young man's game, but I think, and this is something that whenever I would teach this to my students, that the fundamentals that you're learning in martial arts are applicable to so many different aspects of life and things that you can take with you, even if you're not doing it professionally, even if you're not taking a fight, to still understand the fundamentals and be able to utilize those in a way for health and wellness, both mentally, physically, and emotionally, and spiritually, all the way around, that's kind of baked into the DNA as to why I say that I think every young person should go through some form of martial arts training. And to see the guys that went forward and said, I'm going to take this and I'm going to build this ethic into my life, regardless of situation and circumstance, not always chasing the stardom, not always chasing, you know, the next big role or anything, but still maintaining that idea of wanting to challenge yourself and to be more and to do more and all of that. That's something really special. And that's how you can tell. And I think that's for me why there's a certain crop of action guys or athletes or something like that, that kind of sits off to the side from, like, everybody and their mother knows I'm a huge Rocky fan, right? From Philly, the whole nine yards, it all makes sense. But Stallone's an actor. Mm-hmm. I'm a huge Terminator fan. Like, James Cameron warned us about AI like 30 years
a
ago.
A while ago, yeah.
But he was a bodybuilder and turned actor, Schwarzenegger. Mm-hmm. Guys like, again, Bruce Lee, guys like Chuck Norris, guys like Muhammad Ali, these guys, Joe Frazier, Joe Lewis, like there's so many of them that sit in this realm of these guys are martial artists and practitioners of the craft first, and the other things second. And I think that's part of what we see about Chuck Norris specifically, and what he carries forward is that edict of I'm going to maintain a rhythm of doing these things well into my time past being in front of the camera, because this is just a way of being.
Yeah, and I agree that sometimes when you have those people who are more authentic, even though they might not have like the big accolade roles like a Stallone or a Schwarzenegger. I think of guys like Jim Kelly, who was in Enter the Dragon, Three the Hard Way, another guy who was like on the tournament scene. Actually, all those guys from Three the Hard Way, because you also had Fred the Hammer Williamson, who was an NFL player, but also did train in martial arts. I don't know if Jim Brown, who is my personal favorite football player of all time, I don't know if Jim Brown actually trained in martial arts or not, but again, just kind of that mentality of like, that's Jim Brown. That's the guy who would take hits and then still somehow get back up, even though he probably shouldn't have. Like, there adds a level of authenticity to love the Rocky movies. Agreed, though I am not from Philadelphia, do love the Rocky movies, and Stallone is in great shape for those films. Not a boxer. Same with De Niro. You know, like, great actor, not a boxer. And it adds a mystique. It adds a level of mystique to those kind of characters.
Yeah, yeah. And I don't. It's one of those things that I don't. You know, I you cannot replace the authentic nature of somebody who knows what they're doing inside the role. You don't go to, there's a reason why they don't really show a lot of actual out and out boxing scenes in Rocky. And when he when they do, especially for those first couple, Apollo is carrying him because he was the actual the actor was the actual athlete of the two of them. He was an athlete first and an actor second. And so it's when you are coming at it from an experience standpoint, it's there's a gravity to watching somebody who actually knows how to do the thing that you know how to do, especially when you consider the just the ridiculous nature. Like you touched on it before, but the reality is he made a splash. Norris made a splash in the tournament scene, mainly without the strong basis in the practices that he was doing tournaments for, because by that time, at that point in time, there wasn't a serious consideration for the forms of martial arts that he was well versed in. They had just really, like, Brazilian jiu-jitsu is something that really saw its fame explode with the UFC.
Yes.
And judo still struggles to get recognized as a legitimate standalone martial art unless you are in that world. If you are in that world, you take it very seriously. But if you are not, that kind of tends to be one of the quieter ones, which is insane to me because that's one of those forms of martial arts that that are at the top of the list. As far as like, if somebody comes to me and says, what is a good all around practical form of martial arts for me to be able to learn and all of that? And I'll tell somebody judo. And for those of you that are listening that have no idea what either of those forms of martial arts are, BJJ is essentially working from the ground, defending yourself from the ground and attacking from the ground. Whereas judo, it's a lot of throws. It's a lot of how do I use my opponent's momentum to get them to the ground or use my opponent's size to get them to the ground. That's why you see a lot of, for Chuck Norris, you see a lot of those style throws because that's where he's comfortable in and all of that. The main important thing is that neither one of those are particularly strong in striking. Now, Tang Soo-do is where that gets filled in for him. But again, it's still a different martial art than karate.
Yeah. Yeah, Tang Soo-do is going to be the closest because that is the Korean style that does focus more on hand techniques versus something like Taekwondo. But yeah, it's still... These aren't all the same, folks. For those of you non-martial artists out there, these are not all the same. And right. I do very heavily agree with you when it comes to judo. That's like on the top of my list of stuff I would like to train in because I have a lot of respect for it. You know, I look at a guy like Judo Gene LaBelle and just like the longevity of his career and what he was able to do both on screen, in pro wrestling, in tournament judo. Yeah. Like the guy's amazing. Dead now, yeah. But still was amazing at the time.
Yeah. Judokus are some of the scariest individuals that you will meet in your life. Like they are just
That's true.
The things that they can do. And generally, at a smaller stature, generally, judo practitioners are they tend to be a smaller or more compact stature, and the way that they can throw people around and know how to manipulate the body and all of that is just absurd.
It's absurd, and the running gag with Brazilian jiu-jitsu guys is that they don't know what they're doing unless they're on their back. Yep. Have you ever seen those reels of like, there's like somebody breaks into the house and the Brazilian jiu-jitsu guy just falls straight back and just is falls already.
Straight back.
Yeah.
Yep. As somebody who is belted and a coach for Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu. I find those memes hilarious. I really do, because it's so isolated. It's such a It's fun. It's good to know in very niche circumstances, but needs to be paired with other forms of martial arts in order to be actually practical or effective.
Yeah. That's why Muay Thai goes well with it for the MMA scene. So back to Chuck for a bit. Film-wise, so he's been in a bazillion films, it seems like. Good Guys Wear Black, A Force of One, Breaker Breaker, Lone Wolf McQuaid, Delta Force, Missing in Action Part 1 and 2, which for those of you who care about chronology, watch 2 first. Don't know why, but watch 2 first. For you, Joe, what are some of your favorites and some of your favorite scenes from Chuck Norris's filmography?
So those two, or that crop that you just rattled off are all phenomenal. But I'm going to go, knowing that you were probably going to go with those, I wanted to hit a couple that maybe are a little outside of what people would go for. Code of Silence.
Okay.
Is one that was RoboCop before RoboCop. He plays a sergeant that with his crime fighting robot, and it's absurd because the whole thing is based around the war on crime or the war on drugs, and so like he's like this commando with this crime fighting robot fighting these drug kingpins. And it's ridiculous, it's over the top, but it's probably one of my favorite Chuck Norris films.
I think I saw that one like once a long time ago. And yes, RoboCop before it was RoboCop is a great shout for it. I think my all-time favorite is Good Guys Wear Black, because you do have the iconic windshield scene. Another one I really like, again, kind of on the like maybe outskirts of his more popular films, although I've never met anybody who actually likes Breaker Breaker. You ever wanted to watch Chuck Norris be a truck driver? Yeah. The pitch, apparently.
But
one that's a little bit more on the outskirts that I like, Silent Rage. You ever seen Silent Rage?
I have. That was going to be one that I mentioned.
I like that one. For those of you who haven't seen Silent Rage, it's on all of the free streaming sites. Tubi, Pluto, Roku, Freevee. It's on all of them. It's like Night of the Living Dead. Everybody has this movie.
Everybody has it.
It's usually in the horror category. I would say it's more thriller than it is horror. But if I remember right, it's been a while since I've seen it. If I remember right, for those of you who haven't seen the film, Chuck Norris is kind of cast more in like the Harrison Ford typical role of like normal guy, not really like the action hero, war hero that he usually gets, but a little bit more like the normal guy role. Him and his wife are staying at a cabin, and there's like a serial killer guy who's stalking them. And most importantly to the plot, he's hopped up on drugs. And for all of you who are unfamiliar with substance stuff when it comes to self-defense, being intoxicated affects how your body receives and interprets pain. So no matter what they do to this guy, he just gets right. He no-sells everything. He just gets right back up, and he's still chasing them. It's a variant. It's not really like scary, gory kind of horror film. It's intense. It keeps you on the edge of your seat, and it's a little bit of a different role for Chuck.
Yeah, it's so a lot of places will describe Silent Rage as like a proto Terminator sort of movie.
Okay.
With the way that they show his his progression into like this almost this is kind of science fiction meets martial arts in a way, where he's trying to fight this guy who's built almost like an unstoppable force, all because he's on drugs and all of that. And what, you know, Chuck Norris has to become the monster in order to fight the monster, sort of thing.
It's always a safe bet. You have to become the monster.
Yeah.
It's, I guess in a way, he's kind of the villain that is like a Michael Myers, but not as cool.
Yeah, I think that's a very safe way of saying that.
Yeah, not as cool. And a lot less martial arts. Do not want to see Jamie Lee Curtis doing martial arts.
No.
Anyway, any other of the deep cuts that you would like to highlight here?
So I think as far as deep cuts, you know, I would classify it as a deep cut because I think it was very brief, but the Expendables 2, phenomenal the way that he was the way that he was cast in that. But Firewalker from 86.
Oh yeah. Okay.
Basically, guys, if Indiana Jones knew karate, like that's about the size of it. Like it's it is very much that explorer sort of role, but for a guy that would defend himself with karate and martial arts.
Again, sometimes these pitches aren't that hard.
Nope.
What if Indiana Jones knew how to throw a kick?
Yeah, essentially. Because it's as simple as they find a treasure map, our team of heroes are going after a stockpile of gold, and from that point, ridiculous ensues.
Now, there's one big cameo that Chuck Norris is in that I do want to talk about. And no, I'm not talking about his cameo in Dodgeball. But before we talk about this, I thought that would get a laugh. Before we get to this big cameo, I want to play a what if game with you, because I know you're a big fan of these 80s action films. So I'm curious, Joe, you take all the big named guys. So you got like Chuck Norris, Stallone, Schwarzenegger, Bruce Willis, anyone else that you can think of. You're going to put them in a pit, and it's the 80s, okay? Not current day. Because I wouldn't put current day Bruce Willis in a fight pit. That's rude. Prime of their careers. We're putting them in a fight pit. Who's coming out on top?
Oh, I would. There's certainly an argument for Chuck Norris. If he would have continued to be on the scene and a part of the same conversation with everybody else, Bruce Lee tears everybody apart.
Probably.
Yeah.
Probably.
But yeah, head and shoulders, I can't think of another person who's in this kind of like 80s, 70s, 80s action hero sort of thing. Like, yeah, Chuck Norris.
Yeah, when you get like 80s and 90s and you start getting guys like Jean-Claude Van Damme.
Yeah,
maybe I would be hesitant to say Steven Seagal. I know there's people out there who like Steven Seagal. I'm not one of them. So
people can be wrong. It's fine. It's fine.
It's fine.
We're welcoming people here, even people right. with bad opinions. Shout out to Josh.
Yeah, maybe Jean-Claude Van Damme. But because he's got the build and he's got the moveset, but still, like, you have to rely on the fact that if Bruce Lee was still around, he probably would be out kicking everybody still.
Yeah. Yeah. He, so for those of you that don't know, if you guys have ever wondered why, you know, the one inch punch and why, you know, Bruce Lee is considered this freak of nature when it comes to strength and size comparisons and all of that, when you are trying to hit something and hit it as hard as you can, the name of the game is acceleration with whatever your whatever it is that you're doing, a punch or a kick or whatever, and then the snap of the actual hit. And so the amount of acceleration and the force of the actual snap of the hit that Bruce Lee could get with a punch or a kick was absurd. Like, it was just out of bounds. Oh, like, yeah. It's people spend their entire lives trying to train what this man did.
Oh, yeah. Entire lives, even just trying to get into the shape that Bruce Lee was in, let alone be able to recreate the magic of his fighting style. I've done the 1-inch punch through a board one time. I've done it successfully one time. I tried it again another occasion, could not do it. But I got lucky one time doing it. But yeah. And speaking of Bruce Lee, let's talk about that iconic fight, the greatest accidental booking in history, Way of the Dragon. This is like Bruce Lee on the rise. And it's also known as Return of the Dragon, because all of his movies have two titles. One is like the traditional Hong Kong title. The other one is the American title. It's Way of the Dragon, though. I believe this is the one right before Enter the Dragon comes out. So this is Bruce Lee hot on the rise. And there is a scene in the movie where he is in a fight against some guy from the karate tournament scene named Chuck Norris. This is like Chuck really early in his acting career, no beard. And oh, by the way, it's in the freaking Coliseum. How did they know to put it in the freaking Coliseum? How did they know that years later people would look back and go, oh my gosh, Bruce Lee and Chuck Norris fought each other? And it's not just like outside or in a bar. No, it's in the freaking Coliseum.
It's in the Coliseum. Yeah, so this is actually his debut. This is the first time. First time in 72. It was the first time that Norris ever took a seat. Because like you said, it's accidental booking, basically. Yeah. And so, honestly, I think one of the things that has led to the longevity of the mystique of Chuck Norris is the fact that he is linked to Bruce Lee. Mm-hmm. And the fact that Bruce Lee died when he did, and he was just this mysterious figure, and just was able to do what he was able to do. And then on top of it, you have Chuck Norris, who lives the gimmick, who is like, this is a way of life for him. And then coupled with like when he came through the popular zeitgeist and all of that kind of stuff, I think that was the perfect cocktail to make Chuck Norris this long-lived name in action media and all of that. But yeah, I mean, so I thought about it and I'm like, is there really, because Way of the Dragon for me is the benchmark. Like, you, for me, okay, that's what you compare the rest of his work to. Is okay, is any of his other work as good as or better than Way of the Dragon as far as just the quality of content? Now, he is not the main character, so he's not really like, a lot of people don't classify The Way of the Dragon as one of his best movies because it's a Bruce Lee movie, not a Chuck Norris movie. But him playing the nemesis and the foil to Bruce Lee, being this intimidating American figure, like intimidating on his own, but then also playing an American, like being an American playing the role, and the juxtaposition there, it's shot surprisingly well, even though the character of Tang Lung that Norris plays in the movie, like, wouldn't necessarily be my cup of tea normally, like outside of that movie. But just that entire fight sequence is so stinking good.
Oh yeah.
That has become like the top of the mark for me for his stuff.
Yeah, again, it's like, how did they know? Because this isn't like some little throwaway 3-minute match. Like, this is a long fight sequence between Bruce and Chuck, and it goes back and forth for sure.
Yeah.
One of the best moves in the fight is, of course, like I said earlier, Chuck Norris, no beard, all of his hair on his chest, incredibly hairy. And Bruce Lee takes a handful of it and blows it away. Like, best yeah. move in the entire. I've never seen it since then. I've never done it myself. Hopefully someday. But but it is just like this amazing moment of like, how did they know? And you get this, although Bruce Lee is technically American by birth, this very good East meets West kind of fight yeah. sequence.
Yeah.
And again, adding to the mystique of Chuck Norris, another reason in all of this longevity, Chuck usually comes out on top. Bruce Lee kills him in this fight. And it's like, yep. that is the one person that even Chuck Norris could not overcome. And that says something, I think, yeah. to the mystique and the legend of Chuck Norris. That says a lot.
Yeah, like, just like, The fight sequence is about 10 minutes of unbroken camera work. Mm-hmm. And it's just two guys. And Chuck Norris has done interviews after the fact where there were parts of that were a shoot fight. And that's like, insane. Yeah, he's like, that's, he's like, I fought a lot of guys in my life. He's like, I've never fought a guy who hit as hard as Bruce Lee hit. And like, so that was a shoot fight. And then just this dude, just barrel chested, hairy as can be. I'm like, this is some man stuff. Like, this is ridiculous. You For know sure. what I mean? But it's in, it felt weighty. Like, the whole mm-hmm. movie, like, it felt like it was trying to do something.
Mm-hmm.
And you felt the gravity of the situation and then the overcoming hero in it and all of that kind of stuff, you know?
And what's cool about that is the fact that even though Chuck Norris is presented as, like, the final big boss in this film, he actually yeah. gets shoehorned in. It's not like Chuck Norris is running around being the foil the entire time throughout this plot. He shows right. up there at like the very end, essentially, and it still works.
Yeah. And that's for the basis of martial arts movies. That's kind of how it was.
Mm-hmm.
That's why for those, and I'm about to date myself, for those that are of the vintage that to have played arcade fighters, that you have like the ladder, that's yeah. it's taken from the old style martial arts movies where you would work your way up the ladder and then you would have this menacing big boss at the end. It didn't need to be somebody who was in the entirety of the movie.
Mm-hmm.
It was just like the last big, like the bad guy is giving gravity because of the quality of the good guy and the story that has been told up until this point. That for the Way of the Dragon, this whole thing hinges on everything that Bruce Lee brought up to that fight scene, and then those two square up. And that fight scene needed to be quality in order to be remembered as good, not so bad it was good. Because there is a, yeah. a classification of martial arts movies where there it's kind of like the original tokusatsu stuff, like Godzilla, okay. you know, Ultraman, yeah, yeah. all that kind of stuff. You can see the strings on mm-hmm. some of the stuff when it's blown up into high definition and all of that. In this, it's that storytelling, it's that quality of performance, it's the character work of Bruce Lee, and then these two, just two martial artists, just beating the tar out of each other for 10 minutes. And there are some things, like ask anybody that does, you know, less than full contact fighting, we'll call it that. Sure. There are some times that the best way to sell a fight is to shoot fight.
True. That is true. Not the first or last time that Bruce Lee would get accidentally booked into a fight against a prominent named person later on in their career, though they did not get as near as much screen time as Chuck Norris. If you look very quickly during Enter the Dragon, he does beat up Jackie Chan at one point. The beginning of Enter the Dragon, he fights Sammo Hung. And Game of Death, which I think was the movie that popularized the tier fighting system that you were talking about earlier. Yeah. Dan Inosanto is also one of those bosses that he has to fight up that ladder. So a lot of great people who went on to, I don't know if Jet Li, I don't think Jet Li ever had a run in with Bruce, but a handful of people throughout their careers. I think Jackie Chan actually got beaten up more than once as a stuntman on the set of Bruce Lee films. I think he's in Fist of Fury as well.
Okay. Yeah, I didn't know about Jackie Chan, but I knew about the rest of them. Yeah. Yeah, it's a small world for people that are involved in that are legit martial artists.
Mm-hmm. That's for sure. So let's skip now to the 90s. We're around now.
Yeah.
We're here now. So Chuck transitions to television with, as we mentioned before, the very popular Walker, Texas Ranger. And I wanted to present this to you. You remember the 90s a bit better than I do, because I showed up midway through. I'm more of like a 2000s kid, honestly. That's what I remember growing up in. But looking back on the 90s, you know, the 90s is often remembered as like this super edgy time period. You know, you had grunge music, the Attitude Era with wrestling, comics were becoming more adult themed, with the Satanic Panic in the rearview mirror. It actually is like well documented that witchcraft related content became super popular in the 90s with
it
Charmed,
did.
Blair Witch, what's the one? The Craft, like Sabrina the Teenage Witch, like a lot of that stuff. So this time period is often remembered as like this very edgy time period for good reasons. But at the same time, you had Walker, Texas Ranger, Seventh Heaven. What was the one? Angel. I can't remember what that show was called. Touched by an Angel. That were like super wholesome and super popular. And I just think that's a very interesting dichotomy that in like this very like Nirvana fueled time period, we also had these very wholesome shows that maybe aren't standing the test of time as much as everything else. But I don't know. Walker, Texas Ranger just got a CW reboot pretty recently. So somebody out there wants Walker, Texas Ranger stuff. Do you have any thoughts on that?
So from a, it's a tale of two stories. I think for two of the three of them, you can very directly look to the benefit of daytime TV as like the huge catalyst for what made them big, because the older demographic are going to be the ones that are, more interested in that sort of programming. Mm-hmm. The middle-aged, not involved in the grunge and alternative scene of the 90s types are going to be the ones that are going to be super into the daytime TV versus some of the other stuff. And then with Seventh Heaven, that was prime time. That was Monday nights. I remember because that was the lead in for a little while before Monday Night Raw.
Oh yeah, it was, wasn't it?
Yeah, yeah. And that was honestly purely and completely counter programming. That was something that everything is going to go left, and so we're going to go right, and we're going to provide something that's different from this countercultural movement, something that looks back to the good old fashioned American ideals, quote unquote, and goes that route. And so that was what that was intended to be. And it found its home for a while as that counterbalance. Like, don't get me wrong, since we're on a Christian show, I can go ahead and say this. Oh, for the love of everything theological, don't listen to a single thing that show has to say. But jokes aside, like, yeah, it was smart counterbalancing to, like you said, the Nirvana filled, grunge filled existence of the 90s.
Was Walker Texas Ranger a regular show in your household?
Yeah. I mean, I enjoyed it for what it was.
I don't remember watching it as a kid in rerun form when there's like absolutely nothing on, and I actually feel like flipping channels. It's either that or Star Trek Deep Space Nine. That's like my go-to. Like, I just need something light in the background that I don't have to be super invested in. And the other fun thing about Walker Texas Ranger is that sometimes you get really odd cameos, like Snoop Dogg and Hulk Hogan and Christian powerlifting team, the Power Team. I literally said their name in the description. Like, yeah, it was never like a regular thing that we watched, but, you know, kind of like this filler, like, I just need something to watch right now. And it served that purpose well.
So I'm gonna say this, and hopefully there are enough people that are of the vintage that will get what I'm about to say to appreciate what I'm about to say. My very first exposure to the sport of strongman, which for those of you that don't know, before my injury, I was on track to compete in Worlds. I was trying. Oh, nice. My goal was World's Strongest Man. Was Team Impact in the early 2000s. Yeah.
I've seen Team Impact before.
Yep. If you've ever heard of the Christians that ripped phone books in half and football tackled through panes of ice, that is what we were talking about. Look it up. It is fascinating.
That was a whole thing. That was a whole evangel. I don't know if that's still going on or not, but Team Impact, Power Team. There was like a third one I've seen before too. That was like a whole evangelism thing there during the 2000s.
Yeah, early 2000s. I still am a power lifter, but at the same token, like, I look at that from an evangelistic standpoint and from a theological standpoint, and I'm like, oh, the cringe. Oh, the cringe is so real. Muscular Christianity is such a thing. But it is.
You know what? And I think that's a good turn, because there is an important conversation I still want to have. This has been a lot of fun. This is like, I'm going to go watch Way of the Dragon later now, because it's like on my mind at this point. But I think that gives us a good turn to an important conversation when it comes to Chuck Norris. Between the program Walker Texas Ranger and his self-proclaimed faith in Jesus and some of his political leanings and endorsements that we got during, like, I think it was the 2010s. I think Chuck Norris has become, both for pop culture and maybe very narrowly conservative evangelical Christianity, like this ideal Christian man, right? This like muscular Christianity, as you put it, kind of person. And I'll say this, and you can respond first to this. Personally, it is of my opinion that when it comes to gender identity and gender roles specifically, this is an obsession, basically an idol of, I would say, pop culture Christianity. I think this is like something that we are a little too obsessed over. Especially when it comes to gender role stuff. Gender identity, I understand the argument because it is a very cultural conversation now, but like the implementation of gender identity into gender roles, I think that is, that slips into very unbiblical, very like opinion based. Would you agree with where I'm going with this so far?
Yeah, so for listeners, for sake of the conversation, try to separate out the modern context of gender identity from the conversation on gender roles, because gender identity is its own conversation, one mm-hmm. worth having. But like you said, it's the implementation of what that identity means within the context of a relationship, a household, a lifestyle, that becomes very problematic and absolutely 100% is an obsession and an idol for Americans, and one that we get wrong on a pretty consistent basis. If you don't mind me sharing, I will say, I just recently, so for pretty much the entirety of the time that Buddy Walk with Jesus became walking through different books and concepts within scripture and approaching it from that mm-hmm. angle, almost the entirety of the time we were using the ESV, the English Standard Version. I very publicly have moved away from utilizing the ESV, because there are members within the group that brought that to the forefront that were very openly also part of groups that were attempting to keep women in leadership down. And there's very misogynistic language that's been inserted into that translation. And so thus I make the choice. Now, I still stand by what I've said before in the past, that I'm not going to sit here and lay this as a holy tenet for everybody to follow or anything else like that. Whatever. You want to read whatever version of the Bible you want to read, do it. But understand that that translation, as other translations have their pitfalls, that's a very major pitfall of that, because you had men that had an agenda first and were seeking the validity of scripture second, mm-hmm. secondary. And so that's just one small example of how this whole thing and trying to create this epitome of male Christian masculinity, and there's versions for this for Christian femininity as well, that become more of the North Star than trying to actually follow what is biblically sound.
So I'm curious, just to piggyback off of that, because I've gone through this process as well with the ESV. I think I've been very publicly like, yeah, I like the ESV before. And then I've also been made aware of the very misogynistic things that have been inserted into it. And although I don't know him personally and I haven't engaged fully with the content, True 316 spends a lot of time talking about, that's Bruce Fleming, I think is his last name. Him and his mm-hmm. wife spend a lot of time dissecting Genesis 316, which is where the ESV has inserted a lot of the more misogynistic language into, trying to suppress women versus actually interpreting what the words are actually saying. But I'm curious for you, Joe, have you landed on another translation that you like? I've been kind of hunting around a little bit, so I was just curious if you've come across one that you've liked now.
I hang out with the NASB for the most part. Like, okay. if I'm openly teaching, if I'm reading, I'll jump around. I do think, and this is going to be a spicy statement for some, I do think there's value in the NLT. it never pretends to be a word for word translation. It has always been openly a concept for concept translation. Mm-hmm. And I think in certain circumstances and situations, I think that that's very valuable. I think it's problematic when an entire church's system is based around teaching the NLT, personally sure. speaking. That's just my opinion, though. But yeah, generally, I would say the NASB is my next go-to.
I also like the NLT. I use that one a lot with youth ministry. It's the mm-hmm. reading level. Mm-hmm. It's a good one for their reading level. And then I think it's the CSV, Christian Standard Version. It is yeah. a blending of the word for word and thought for thought. And yeah. I like it quite a bit. But back to Chuck, now that I know we're kind of on the same page here when it comes to this gender role obsession that Christianity has here in America, where are, in your opinion, times where Chuck Norris actually does serve these characters that he has played, this persona that he has had? Where are times where he actually is like, okay, that is a role model worth following? Because let's face it, he is going to make an impact still to this day on men, on young men. So where are times where, okay, yeah, that is actually something worth following? And where are times where it's more of a, no, that is a caricature of how masculinity is?
Yeah, so Chuck Norris is, like, in his role in Walker, Texas Ranger, a lot of the time ends up, fighting for the underdog or trying to help somebody or trying to use his skills to benefit other people. Mm-hmm. So while there are absolutely nationalistic portions of it and all of that kind of stuff, but it always proves to be, like, or it never tries to be anything that's trying to be like theologically accurate or anything else like that, or anything sure. that's like Christian per se. It's just moralistic more than anything else, and falling more into that genre. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I would say that that's probably the go-to one that I could think of out of his roles.
Okay. Kind of that fighting for the underdog. I agree that could slip into like kind of a white saviorism kind of commentary, yeah. but yeah, just the idea of there's a way to stand up for underdogs, for the disadvantaged, that yeah. you don't become a white savior or it's all about you kind of thing. I would say for me on the positive end, then we can look at the, times where it's not really that great. When it comes to on the positive end, I think there is a place in all of this to look to the grit and determination that yeah. Chuck Norris has. Now, grit and determination and fighting for the underdog, none of this is inherently masculine at all. Women can do right. this, but knowing the general audience who's going to be watching Chuck Norris stuff, Joe and I will never, ever, ever advocate for pull yourself up by your bootstraps Christianity.
Nope.
However, there is a place for pick up your cross and follow me. There mm-hmm. is, in American Christianity, this idea that it should be easy. It should be simple. And it's not.
Right.
Self-denial, it will take grit and determination. It is going yep. to take courage. It is going to be difficult. We're recording this and it will be releasing during Lent, which is this time period where Christians fast and practice self-denial. And these kind of things, and Sabbath rest as well, often kind of get pushed aside when it comes to yep. spiritual disciplines, because we have this idea that it should be easy to follow Jesus. And sometimes faith is easy, but generally speaking, I've found that taking a leap of faith is an expression for a reason. It's hard. It's yep. difficult. And I think that is something in a lot of these kind of characters, but particularly here with Chuck Norris, that we can see that sometimes to get something done or to grow in your spiritual life, it's going to take some determination. It's going to take some effort on your part.
So one of the things biblically that I think kind of gets brushed under the rug sometimes is this idea that we think that just because we're Christians, we're not going to face temptation. That is not biblically sound. We are absolutely going to face temptation, even after becoming a Christian. After facing temptation a million times, we are still going to be tempted. It's never a matter of not facing temptation. It's always a matter of take up your cross and follow me. And that is something that resolve is something that is universal from the non-Christian context to the Christian context, and is something that's very important for Christians to be able to pick up and roll with.
Yes. Yes. Again, neither one of us will ever say, pick up your bootstrap, pick yourself up by your bootstraps. No, this is actually something that's very different and very countercultural from the 80s one-man army crew. And also is kind of the poetic irony of the Expendables is that you are part of the body of Christ. You are part of the church. You have people who are there to carry, help you carry your burdens, to carry your burdens, to help you get back up when you do stumble or life is just coming down too hard on you. What we are saying, though, is that there are times where temptations will come. Life will be hard, and to keep your eyes on Jesus, it's going to take some prayer. It's going to take some determination to keep trusting him.
Yep.
Where are times where maybe Chuck's a little bit more of like a, that's a stereotype. That's not an ideal view of masculinity to follow.
Yeah, honestly, I think a big portion of that is for you. You had mentioned it with the Walker Texas Ranger stuff, but even more so with his crime fighting movies in that catalog, it very much ends up reading as Chuck Norris is here to save the day from the drug dealers. Who do the drug dealers end up being? People of color. It ends up reading as a white conservative against the evil POCs.
Yeah.
So
not like, a good look.
not a good look. And that's part of like, Part of the issue when your stance is mainline Christianity in a world like today, it's kind of along the same lines as Kevin Sorbo. The dude has not done himself any favors by some of the nonsense that he has come off with and all of that kind of stuff. And so I will say Chuck Norris has had more tact with it than Kevin Sorbo has. Kevin Sorbo needs to get a publicist and hide behind them and stop talking to people with a camera and stop making movies. I know I have not forgiven Kevin Sorbo for God's Not Dead. lost his privileges. Anyway.
Oh, that was funny.
It's trash. Anyway.
Oh, it is.
Yeah. Even people who were part of the church at the time that were like hyper, like drinking the Kool-Aid, part of the system sort of thing. Like, I need to talk to you about this movie. Okay. Why does this movie seem like it's demonizing anybody who doesn't believe in Jesus? Because it is. It's making them out to be the devil. 100%.
Correct.
Oh, is that wrong? Yes, that's wrong. I don't know who needs to know that, but if you own God's Not Dead, what I want you to do and follow me. Seriously, this is important information. I want you to take it out, right? Take it out of whatever you're holding it in, all of that kind of stuff. I want you to take it outside because we don't want to damage anything in your house. And I want you to take a hammer of some kind. And I want you to hit that thing as hard as you can repeatedly until nobody can ever be hurt by that thing ever again. Okay, I'm done.
The that conversation you led us through, all I could visualize was that famous meme of Batman smacking Robin. That's all I could envision. That's bad, right? Yes.
Yes, that's bad.
Oh, my gosh. Wow. I do agree, though. I'm not up on all things Kevin Sorbo, but I do agree that I think Chuck has handled it with a little bit more tact. Even back, like, I think it was like the 80s or 90s, he was taken to task on one of those shows, like Geraldo, one of those shows where they bring a guest on to scream at them for 30 minutes about like the amount of violence that is in his movies and where he stands politically and with his faith, and just like the sheer amount of gun violence that comes in, because he made a lot of like war movies, Delta Force, Mission Missing in Action. I lost the name of it. And he was like kind of taken back because he did not realize like how much this was going to be like a "you're evil" kind of conversation, but just trying to like, "Hey, I'm an artist. These are the roles I got. I don't know what else you want from me." I think that's definitely like, you got to watch yourself. And by the way, great, great little reminder there on the whole God's Not Dead thing. I'll get on one of my soapboxes. Youth group mission trips, it's just white saviorism.
That's 100%.
That's 100%. All it is. Stop doing "We're going to Haiti to build a whatever thing." Just stop. Just send money. Like, seriously, just stop. Anyway, I'm going to go back to the whole OMAC one man army crew thing. Like, no, we're not supposed to do this alone.
Right.
Whether you're a Christian or not, life is not supposed to be, what's that Paul Simon song, I am a rock, I am an island. No, you're not. We need each other. We really do, especially within our faith. We need community. It's hard. It's difficult. I don't like it. I would rather do this on my own. It's way simpler. Yep. It's way easier than having to deal with people on social media. But that's part of the difficulty of being a Christian, is being in community and loving those around you in that community.
Yep. Absolutely. Absolutely.
Any final thoughts on Chuck Norris before we close things out? I'll give you final word if you'd like.
Final word is just a fun fact for those of you that don't know. Chuck Norris's tears, they do in fact cure cancer. It's just unfortunate that the man's never cried a day in his life.
It's a real shame. Bit of a bummer to end on, but we're going to go with it. Thank you, Joe, for being here on what was an amazing episode. And thank you all for listening to today's episode. If you haven't yet already, please rate and review the show wherever you listen, and share this episode with a friend, or Chuck Norris will come for you. I didn't make the rules. That's just what's going to happen. You have to share this episode with somebody if you want to continue to listen to the show. If you would like to financially support the show, you can head on over to buymeacoffee.com/MSLpod, leave a one-time donation, or support the show monthly. Everyone who supports the show at the $9 a month tier gets a shout out. So thank you, Lori, for supporting the show. You can head into the description of the episode to find links to all the important things, including a link to Buddy Walk with Jesus, so you can check out Joe's show and the plethora of other related shows that Joe is a part of. The man loves starting new podcasts almost as much as Joshua Knoll does. They're both obsessed. I want to be cool like them and have more podcasts to my name, but alas, someday. And that's it. We will be back. This episode's coming out on a Tuesday because it's a special edition show, but we'll be back regular, same bat time, same bat channel, this Saturday for another celebratory episode celebrating someone else born in March. But until then, this is Brandon signing off, and instead of the regular sign off, I just wanted to end this reminding you all that the eyes of the ranger are upon you. And when you're in Texas, look behind you, because that's where the ranger is going to be.